Hare Krishna. I'm in London. Rainy day. I'm just here for the day to get support from some devotees for purchasing a temple in Paris. If I missed you by any chance, let me know. Anyway, we're having good facilities. There was one very nice property that we were going to purchase. Unfortunately, the planning for the building that we're going to convert into the temple wouldn't have been given, so we had to give that one up. But that was really ideal within our budget. Now we're looking for another place that's a little beyond our budget. Anyway, hopefully we can increase our budget by today's visits. 1993 to 1996, it was the years for planning. And my experience for that time was the real chore of trying to convince devotees of the facilities that were going to stay Krishna conscious. In other words, by that, I meant that all the devotees at this time were Sankirtan devotees, although we had a few pujaris for Dayanitai Vijayagaranga in Budapest. Everyone was distributing books, preaching, doing festivals, and everyone was brahmachari and brahmacharini, with the exception, I think, of Yudhisthira and Krishnalila, who already came to Krishna consciousness as grihasthas. We had no other householders. And of course, what was everyone's vision for the future? We're all going to stay brahmacharya, and we're all going to stay brahmacharini, and we're going to do book distribution for the rest of our lives. Everyone will remain a celibate. And it was extremely difficult for me to convince the devotees that this may not end up being the reality, is that ladies all need to get married, and whereas it would be good if all brahmacharis stayed brahmachari, but that wouldn't quite work sociologically if the ladies did have to get married, and that wasn't the experience that I had from the past. Past experience proved that while it was good to encourage devotees to remain brahmachari and that all devotees should stay brahmachari, all men should stay brahmachari for some years, but in the long haul, a good percentage of them would enter into the grihastha ashram. But in their enthusiasm and zeal, and also in their immaturity, devotees didn't immediately see that. And it took quite some persuading discussion, individually, collectively, through istagostis and classes, that devotees would get married. That when they got married, they would do one of two things. Either they would just preach, or they should live a self-sufficient lifestyle, as Srila Prabhupada envisaged in the development of Varnashram. And that means that they would have to, or they should, live on a farming community. Devotees really weren't into the idea of getting a farming community. And I pointed out that, but in a farming community is where you would also have Gurukula, where you could raise your children in pure Krishna consciousness and avoid the difficulties that these devotees went through in their pre-Krishna conscious years. But of course, everyone was arguing that no one is going to have children. Even if they got married, they didn't really want to have children. They wanted to continue to become preachers. Nonetheless, we began looking, even as early as 1990, I started engaging some devotees in looking for different places where we could develop a farming community. It wasn't easy. For one reason was that in the communist regime up until 1989, all of the land that was originally held up until the Second World War in private ownership became cooperatives. People then were deprived of their lands, they generally went to live in cities, or if they stayed in their lands, then their lands were collectivized, and they worked together like that. So now that the lands were being given back again by the government to the people, many of the people were no longer in the villages where they farmed. If they were, many of them didn't do the type of individual farming that they had done. It was collective farming that was going on before, which was based on large machines and much less fewer people. And all of these lands were 1 hectare, 2 hectare, in other words, just a few acres large. So it was very difficult to find large pieces of land that would be available, and also within the budget that we had. In Debrecen, which was our second temple at that time, the devotees there had bought a very small encampment, which later then sold, because it wasn't a strategic area, wasn't something that was developable for a large community. And in 1993, when I was in Vrindavan, I got a telephone call from Gaur Shakti, who had found the property. And we had budgeted, I think, $1,000,000 at that time, which is in present currency about $5,000. He found, I think, somewhere up to 100 hectares that was available near this village, where the local mayor was willing to help us collect all of the owners of the property so that we could buy it all in total. And we acquired a little more money, just about the same. And so we purchased that. We purchased it at a phenomenally low price, if you can. Well, it was about 15,000 forint, which a hectare, which again in present currency converts to about $75 a hectare. Extremely cheap. It's almost 1,000 times the value at the present time, or buying nearby lands is 1,000 times more. And when I got back from India, I went to see this place. It was 2 kilometers from a village which was more or less running to ruin, in the sense that people were abandoning it. Half the village was occupied by gypsies, and the land was very nice. It was rolling hills. You all know what New Rajadam looks like. Very good soil, or at least relatively good soil for agriculture, not as good as some other parts of Hungary, but relatively good. But the main thing was that the local mayor was behind us and was helping us. He had already received some of our books from the book distributors in Hungary. And he was making a very major decision, which he didn't make alone. He actually spoke with the Minister of Parliament for the county and the other county representatives, and he was bargaining that the Hare Krishnas, if they moved here, that they would bring people here, they would bring money here, it would help revive the economy and the life of the local village. And as it turned out, he was right. It was high risk. I think very few mayors would make such a calculation. I could only think that this was Krishna's arrangement. And therefore, we began to make New Brajadam, which we then called it, or Krishna Valley, a national project. We purchased a little house in the village, and 6 devotees lived there. It was extremely austere for the beginning years. And the plan was that we would build a temple. I worked on a budget, again, in present currency of about $20,000, $30,000 for building a temple. And while in India in 1993, once I heard of this land project, I made sketches and drawings of the temple, which is the presently existing temple. I showed those to an architect who was very enthusiastic. He was actually a very famous architect in Hungary who taught in the university, taught architecture. And he and someone else who we later took on as a engineer made the architectural plans, the statistic plans, and the final plans for the construction. It was really quite interesting because I wasn't that convinced about entering into such a huge venture for which we had very little funds. New Rajadam was being funded by Budapest Temple. They were giving 400,000 forint, £1,000 a month, $2,000. But the architect was very enthusiastic. He drew up the plans and more or less encouraged me into building the temple right away. There were very few devotees there on the farm, and we were doing farming. We had some a bean crop in that year. We planted beans, some vegetables, and the devotees were living there. We acquired Chitra, which was a horse who would ride around on the property. And the first devotees moved there, all of whom I can't remember, into that little house. Anior Vasi was one of them, and he's still there. And Jagannath was there, and Subhadra, and Krishnamayi, and Chandradoya. And also the BBT team moved down. Nalini Kanta, of course, she was more often in Sweden, but Yashodamayi, Manjari, Sanatani, they were translating Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they were living in a house nearby, and Paramakaran and his family were there, and a little later Haripad and Bhima and Bhakti Chandrika moved to New Brajadam, and Haripad became the temple president. So I think before going to India in 1994 in February, I remember going out, Anior Vasi dug a big hole in which we installed Anantashesh that we made. Our artists in Budapest had made Anantashesha, and he dug this enormous big hole into which myself and Chaitanya Chandra climbed down. And we performed this installation ceremony on top of the hill and laid the foundation stone for a temple. It was extremely cold. The mayor was there, other people from the village were there. Devotees had come from Budapest and all over Hungary. And it was quite an extraordinary phenomenon, is that we were laying foundation for a temple in the middle of nowhere where there was no electricity, no gas, no roads, just on the faith that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to have a Varnashram community, a self-sufficient community. And in order for that to work, Krishna had to be there, and Krishna would be the center of New Brajadam. It was all a dream. It was actually a wonderful dream, and devotees shared in that dream. They had faith that if this is what Prabhupada wanted, even though we don't understand why we need it, we should go forward. And still, that's what drives New Brajadam forward, fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's dream of a Varnashram community. And the faithful participate in that. In the years 1994 to 96, we worked on a master plan for New Brajadam and got that approved very, very easily by comparison to my experiences in the UK, how difficult it was to get anything done, for instance, around the manor, and we were spending, literally speaking, hundreds of thousands of pounds in legal fees in order to have permission to continue our public worship at Bhaktivedanta Manor. It was so easy. It was like cutting butter. and it was obviously Krishna's will that this happen. Who's the person who built their house? Perhaps it was Jagannath, and then Jagat Kirti, Mahajan. They moved to New Rajadham. We didn't have any place to live on the property as yet. And devotees began to invest in the future of the Hungarian Yatra. Madhavi also began a house in which now Parameshwar and Pranay Shalini live. And just to give you an idea of how austere, I remember being in the motorhome and parking, because we had no road, parking at the entranceway, what is now the reception area, and behind the main offices. That was the second building that we purchased. And we had to walk in for Mangalarti. We had very strict rules that everyone had to attend Mangalarti. And when we first began construction, which was, I guess, in the winter, fall of 1994, of the temple, which I'll speak about more tomorrow, and that children would be able to come to Gurukul unless they attended Mangalarti. So we would have Mangalarti in there, and in the winter there was as much as a meter of snow, at least at this time, on the ground. And Jagat Kirti was living with Vishakha and Ratnavati in the village, and they would walk. That was a 20-minute walk, half-hour walk, to Mangalarti every morning in the freezing cold. As I mentioned, where there is a road now from reception all the way up to the temple, we used to tread the same path, but there was no road. We would just walk through the snow. And I remember being in the motorhome, hearing them coming by every morning, going through the cold and snow or rain, walking up to the temple. It also made me ashamed, therefore I would also have to go and follow suit. You had to have big boots and just trudge your way into the temple. And it was on that basis of that austerity and determination and faith of the devotees that New Brajadham is built on at the present time. It was once again the beginning of a new era. It was the beginnings of New Brajadham. Devotees had nothing. At that time, in 94, the brahmacharis lived already where the farm is. We had a barn up there. That was the only building that was existing there. And they lived in the barn. They lived in the barn. They heated a certain portion of the barn, took cold showers outside. They had to break the water because there's no running water. They had to collect water in buckets, break the water, and break the ice that was on top of the water, and use freezing cold water to shower themselves off with. And that's how we lived. We built a little temple over there, which had straw bales for walls, and we also cooked there. We cooked in the open. Chandradoya cooked in the open, even in the winter time, and that was freezing cold in the winter. And we would eat there, we would worship there, we would huddle together on the little stove to stay warm during japa period and Bhagavatam class. It was very, very austere. Tapo Divyam. But by that austerity, devotees advanced in Krishna consciousness and established the foundations for New Brajadham. It was that austerity by which it would also continue to progress. And Radhe Shyam, anyway, I'll speak about Radhe Shyam tomorrow. Hare Krishna.